From RedPeachSports.com, you're listening to Born in the Boot with your hosts, Sean Fox and Ben Mintz. Born in the Boot is your weekly taste of Louisiana sports, food, and culture. Now straight from the bayou, here's your hosts.
Welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Born in the Boot podcast. Sean Fox, joined by my weekly co-host, Ben Mintz. Ben, always a fun time to get together, but particularly this week as the old Magnolia Bowl, LSU and Ole Miss get together this weekend in Tiger Stadium.
Yeah, it is a pleasure, Sean, and unfortunately one team's got a lot more momentum than the other. The team from the boot, got to like their chances going into this thing. Ole Miss, a heartbreaking loss last week at Arkansas, 34-30, and while the Rebels certainly have a lot of talent, it's pretty crazy to think they're 3-3 on the season, and they're pretty much just going to be playing the spoiler role the rest of the way. But historically, when Ole Miss is an underdog in Baton Rouge against LSU, they play extremely tough. So hopefully we'll have a good game on Saturday night.
Well, let's save the LSU-Ole Miss talk for last. Let's start going around the boot, what happened this past week. Louisiana Tech with a dominant victory on the road against UMass, a really unfamiliar opponent, and doing what you have to do to a bad team, and that's dominate them. Final score 56-28, Ben, but the game actually should have been a lot worse. Louisiana Tech's coverage units continued to struggle for the second consecutive week, and the Bulldogs had four turnovers. That is some concerns going forward, but we'll get to that in just a second. I want to start by saying I mentioned on my show on ESPN Radio that I think, and stats back this up, that right now, the best wide receiver duo, not in Conference USA, not in the South, in the country, is the one in Ruston, Louisiana with Carlos Henderson and Trent Taylor. What say you?
Here, I'm going to throw some stats at you, Mr. Fox, because you know me. I'm a stats analyst.
You're a stat guy.
That's my thing. Carlos Henderson's last two football games, 20 catches, 558 yards, and 8 touchdowns. Yeah, that's not a typo. That's more than a season. That's an above-average season for most starting receivers in D1.
Ben, you and I grew up playing the Xbox and the PlayStations and all that. He's putting up PlayStation numbers the last couple weeks.
12 for 326 and 5 touchdowns. That's the greatest game. It kind of brought back memories of the Troy Edwards 405-yard game at Nebraska. Granted, UMass clearly not that level of an opponent, but that's the history we're talking in Louisiana Tech football. And not just are Henderson and Taylor maybe the best receiving combo in the country, but they just complement each other so well because Taylor is so good at going underneath and such a solid possession guy. And then Henderson, you can run bubble screens too and also throw down the field too. And it's a defensive coordinator's nightmare because they work, you know, opposite areas of the field.
We were debating a few weeks ago whether or not Ryan Higgins should be the starting quarterback over J'Mar Smith. And now you look up and Ryan Higgins, number two quarterback passing in the entire country. He has played at an extremely high level and really put that debate to rest.
He has, and you got to give Skip Holtz a lot of credit for not letting any of the noise outside the building affect him. He said all along Higgins was his guy. Higgins did make the mistake before the season with the DUI. He served his time, you know, sat out the Arkansas game. And Higgins had that bad first half against South Carolina State in week two in the second home game where he had three turnovers. But from that point in the first half until this UMass game, he had no turnovers, I believe. He really cut down the turnovers. I know he had a few in this game. But overall, clearly Skip Holtz knows what he's doing when it comes to coaching an offense. And Louisiana Tech's offense is rolling. And, Sean, I want to back up your point. To me, this says a lot about Tech, even if UMass is bad. We saw Mississippi State go up there a couple weeks ago and beat them 47-35 in a game that was close.
You know, UMass actually had the lead late in the third quarter in that ball game.
Yeah, and Louisiana Tech coming off an emotional win over Western Kentucky, 55-52, who'd won back-to-back Conference USA titles, going up to the Northeast, flying far away from home in a non-conference game. That's the game that reeks of a trap game to me. It really does. And so it says a lot about Tech that they were able to go up there and take care of business in a big way. And you know, now you start looking forward for the Bulldogs. Road trip to Miami to play Florida International, who has won three in a row, but albeit against weaker competition.
Well, let me say this about the FIU game, Ben. A month ago, I would have said this is a foregone conclusion that Louisiana Tech is going to beat FIU. But we've seen here in the boot what a coaching change can do for a football team with Ed Orgeron at LSU. I think the same can be said from Ron Turner, Ron Cooper, starting 0-4, making a coaching change. Now all of a sudden FIU's won three in a row. They are currently in first place in the Eastern Division of Conference USA. Do I think Louisiana Tech is a better team, and do I think they're going to win? Absolutely. But this is a much tougher game than I thought it would be a month ago.
No doubt. And hey, I mean, I know it's a different sport, but we all know what happened in that basketball game down there last year. So Louisiana Tech, you know, in Tech, weren't they up like 34-10 and lost?
I think it was like 34-3.
Yeah, something crazy. So you can never take anything for granted when you go on the road to conference play. And as you said, Four International coming in with some momentum. And all of a sudden for Louisiana Tech, you got a lot in front of you. Southern Miss under new coach Jay Hobson hasn't quite played as well as we thought they would. And, you know, Louisiana Tech's got a shot in this conference USA Western Division, and she's got to get the momentum rolling.
Right now, with Western Kentucky beating Middle Tennessee last week, Tech actually in the driver's seat controlling their destiny in Conference USA. In fact, if anybody but Middle wins the East, Louisiana Tech will host the Conference USA championship game should they win out in your backyard, actually at Independence Stadium, because as soon as the last game with against UTSA at JAA Stadium is finished, they're tearing down the press box to add a new press box and suites to the Joe. So actually, the Conference USA championship game would be in Shreveport.
Man, I got the hairs tingling up on my arm right now thinking about how much fun that would be doing sports radio in Shreveport for you and I to do a show from there. And look, it's a feasible possibility for Louisiana Tech. You never want to look too far ahead. You know how college football is. It's a week-to-week deal. Tech's got a tough road game this week. But when you look at their schedule, you know, you got what, at FIU, Rice at home, at North.
I don't think there's anybody on the schedule at home they can lose to. I think the only opponent I could see them dropping a game to would be Southern Miss.
Mm-hmm. And that game is Thanksgiving weekend in Hattiesburg, so that's going to be tough on the road. But the Bulldogs should have revenge on their mind after what happened last year in Ruston. But regardless, I'm proud of Louisiana Tech's effort here, because when you start the year 1-3 and you lose heartbreakers like they did to Middle Tennessee State and Arkansas, the team not getting deflated and, you know, keeping what's in front of them, that Western Kentucky game, the fork in the road moment for the season, getting that huge home win, and now they're getting rolling and brighter days ahead, and you got to give Skip Holtz and his staff and the team credit for showing resiliency after that tough start.
Let's stay in North Louisiana in Lincoln Parish, and Grambling coming off a rare back-to-back bye week. Man, these guys are playing so good. I know they didn't play. They would have won. They're just that good right now. And heck, they're so good they might have even beaten the bye. That's how good Coach Fobbs and that squad is doing. In fact, there's already talks. Last week, our friend Sean Isabella from the New Star putting out there that Grambling, and kudos to them, working on a new contract for Coach Fobbs, certainly justified. If you remember where this program was, heck, they were boycotting games 3 or 4 years ago before Coach Fobbs got there to where they are now. They didn't play in 2 weeks, doesn't matter. The rest of the schedule, Ben, they don't play a team with a winning record the rest of the way. In fact, I think the only team that's at 500 is that last game in the Superdome against Southern. They should be able to build all kinds of momentum starting against winless Mississippi Valley, getting ready for that game that everybody circles every year, the Bayou Classic.
And Grambling has broken into the top 25 of FCS too, correct?
Yeah, they're very good. In fact, I will continue to harp on this. Had Devontae Kincaid not gotten hurt against Arizona in the first half, we're talking about one of the biggest upsets of all time. They were dominating that game.
56.5 point underdog.
Yep.
Yeah, they're up 21-3 as a 56.5 point underdog, and I'm happy for Devontae Kincaid too. I'm glad to see that's worked out for Broderick Fobbs in the Grambling program. He was extremely well liked up at Ole Miss, and I was up there with him, and I'm glad to see him land on his feet and doing well. And I'm excited for Grambling. Sean, I have a question for you because I don't know the answer to this. Because of the Southern thing and the Bayou Classic, can Grambling play
no.
in the FCS playoffs?
No, that is part of the deal. That is actually the week, or that is the they will not move the game from the Saturday after Thanksgiving because of the TV deals and the exposure. And let's be honest, the HBCU doesn't normally get an exposure like that. They would rather play in the Bayou Classic than play in the playoffs. I've debated that for years, but clearly we know how big the Bayou Classic is to the Grambling and the Southern fans.
But either way, I think the main story is what you said about what Coach Fobbs has done. Because I remember 3-4 years ago, I remember all the talk about how bad their facilities were and, you know, just should the athletic program even exist because it was, you know, there was just so little money. And you know, when you come into a situation like that as a coach, it's awful hard to deal with when you're recruiting when you can't sell nice facilities or anything like that. And, you know, Grambling does have a great tradition, and you just got to give Coach Fobbs credit. He's gone the transfer route. He's gotten transfer talent from all over the country. And, look, they're playing great football, and I'm glad to see they're going to be playing in Ruston next year, too, I saw. I believe.
2018 or 2019.
2018, okay.
Yeah, they're going to start the season. Okay. They played over in your neck of the woods in Shreveport, but it makes sense to play the game in Lincoln Parish. That's a game people are already looking forward to. Let's travel down I-20 East, since we're here in North Louisiana right now on this segment of Born in the Boot, where ULM and Coach V get back in their winning ways for the first time in well over a month, hanging on to beat Texas State for a happy homecoming. Good news is the Warhawks get a victory. The bad news is they lose quarterback Garrett Smith for the season.
He's out for the season.
He's
I knew
out
he
for
got
the
hurt.
Season,
I knew
yeah.
It was bad. I didn't know it was a season. Well, the backup played real well in this game.
He did.
From what I understood.
Will Collins played extremely well. Threw for 2 touchdown passes and rushed for over 80 yards. And this is the big story for me, Ben. I know you're just getting reacquainted with the Warhawks here over the last couple of years. One thing under Coach Barry, this team has not been able to do is rush the football. And if you're one-dimensional and if you don't have an elite offense being able to throw the football like a Texas Tech, heck, we've even seen Coach Leach adapt to the rushing game somewhat at Washington State. But if you cannot run the football, you're not going to be successful. ULM over 300 yards rushing against Texas State. In fact, had two running backs go over 100-yard mark. No matter who the quarterback is, Garrett Smith, Will Collins, if you can run the football, you can have success.
And you got to give credit to offensive line coach.
Absolutely.
Dale, who brought a lot of a wealth of experience. And look, this ULM offensive line last year was a disaster, and you can clearly see that steps forward have been made under Rob Sale. And you also got to give credit to Coach Viator, who's known for having a balanced offense. That's what he had at McNeese State. He wasn't just an air raid guy. And this shows that he's putting his fingerprints on the program in year one. And when you look at ULM's season so far, to me, yeah, the Idaho loss was heartbreaking at home. But clearly, you know, it takes time, but you see baby steps of progress. The offense looks better. The team's competing hard. You saw they almost won at Georgia Southern, which would have been incredible a month ago. And the future of the program is bright. I forgot the Neville kid's name that committed to there yesterday, too.
Yeah, this Marbles, I think, says name. ULM. Yeah, defensive back. That's a good
yeah,
get for
but
them.
Either way, though, you could – yeah, and when you look at what Viator's done in recruiting, I believe he's got 12 commitments already.
It's unheard of.
You just see that there's a plan in place and some momentum going forward, and you just got to trust the process. But either way, just for ULM fans in Monroe, it's nice to not feel hopeless.
Well,
feel like there's some direction.
And kind of like with Louisiana Tech last week going to UMass, I mean, when you see group of five teams go play non-conference games and usually tend to stay either in the Big 12 country, out of the Sun Belt Conference USA or the SEC or even the ACC, Louisiana Tech unfamiliar playing territory playing UMass, ULM this week going to the Mountain West to take on New Mexico and Bob Davie.
That is a weird one. And yeah. Bob Davie and New Mexico have a tough rushing attack, don't they? I'm pretty sure they run triple.
They do. They run a triple option. That's right.
They just beat Air Force this past week. Yeah, that's a rough matchup for ULM because you never want to play that triple option just randomly in the middle of the year. And it's kind of a weird game going all the way out west to New Mexico. So I hate to say it, but my hopes aren't too high here. Hopefully the Collins, the backup quarterback, can play well because he's going to have to if they're going to have a chance here.
I feel like we're saying rinse, repeat here when it comes to the ULL Raging Cajuns, but they had a prime time game last, I believe, Tuesday or Wednesday on national television at home against a very good App State team, which I think everybody in the country is now familiar with after their games with Tennessee and Miami. And Ben, the Cajuns at this point weren't even competitive. They got beat at home 24-0.
No, and the offense, the Anthony Jennings thing has been a complete disaster. There's no if, and, or but about it. They can't score. And this program, with all the NCAA sanctions, it seems like the glory days are – it's crazy, Sean, in these smaller conferences. You don't see this as much in the bigger conferences. But, you know, teams – things can turn sour in a very, very quick amount of time. You know, ULL had the 4 straight New Orleans Bowl win, and then all of a sudden that seems like it was 5 years ago
It does.
Only a year and a half ago.
It does.
And now they've got no momentum. They have the David Saunders sanctions against them, and they've been relying on the transfer route on quarterback, and that's not working. And Coach Hudspeth and those guys looking for more questions than answers right now down in Lafayette. And what will be interesting to see is if Viator and ULM can capitalize on that. ULL playing at ULM, I think, later this year. That's a monster game for the Warhawks. They really need to win that for momentum in state.
Cajuns this week, speaking of the Warhawks, they take on the opponent that the Warhawks faced last week at Texas State, except they're going to San Marcos. Let's continue our journey throughout the state of Louisiana, go from Lafayette down to New Orleans, where the Tulane Green Wave hosted Memphis on a Friday night on national television. And, Ben, this program under Willie Fritz, we both love that hire. I think they're light years better than they were already last year, but they've still got a ways to go. Competitive, just not enough firepower offensively. They hung around for the entire game but lose to Memphis 24-14.
Yeah, but no shame in this. Memphis is a good football team. And Memphis, you know, I watched that Memphis-Ole Miss game 3 or 4 weeks ago, and Memphis scored more points against Ole Miss than they did against Tulane. And that's a credit to Tulane's defense. And Willie Fritz bringing in kind of that a little bit of a run option-based scheme himself, even though it's more out of the shotgun. And that when you kind of bring in that offensive scheme, you can't expect year one for the offense to turn around, because he's got to get his kids in there to run that specific of a scheme when the last coach didn't run it. And I like the progress we've seen from Tulane so far. The defense is good. Love the new facilities. Just give, you got to give Fritz a year or two, but I think they could be a force to be reckoned with in the American Athletic Conference much sooner than later.
And they will travel to Tulsa this week. We mentioned Grambling earlier in the SWAC. Southern, I was wrong. They've got a little bit of momentum going. They are actually above 500. They'll probably continue that. They'll host a very bad Arkansas Pine Bluff. In fact, Ben, let's be honest. Outside of Grambling, Prairie View, and Southern, this conference is pretty bad. Those three holding up the rest of the league right now.
Well, it's going to be fun. The Bayou Classic sounds like it's going to be a big one this year, and that's great for both Grambling and Southern. And the national exposure, like you said, it sounds like it sets up for both those teams to have really good records going in.
Over to the Southland Conference, the Colonels of Nicholls State in a thriller beat Houston Baptist 33-30, and I found this interesting. I think Kevin Ollie, one of the stars from
Ronald Ollie was
one of the players of the week in the Southland Conference last week as the Colonels get past Houston Baptist. Kudos to them. Again, this team, light years better under Coach Rebo this year compared to last year. Last year they go to Monroe and get beat, I think, 50 or 55 nothing by the Warhawks. Competitive against Georgia. In fact, a lot of people feel they should have won that football game, and now they're doing some damage, 3-1 in the Southland Conference. This is one of the better stories people aren't talking about.
Oh, I completely agree, and I think Ollie had an 85-yard field goal return for a touchdown. That was the difference in that game from what I read. And look, Nicholls State's playing, this is a place that doesn't exactly have much of a football tradition, but you see they're clearly recruiting better, and as you said, they lost by 2 at Georgia. They competed at South Alabama. Well, Nicholls State clearly on the way up in South Louisiana.
And you talk about recruiting better, doing it with a freshman quarterback, and you will remember this name. Does the name Forcade ring a bell to you?
Oh, wow, John Forcade's son?
John Forcade's nephew, Chase Forcade, true freshman from Rummel High School in New Orleans, of course, a perennial power in the state of Louisiana, had an offer from Maryland as well, has had an offer from ULM. In fact, it came down to ULM and Nicholls in Maryland on signing day. He chose the Colonels, and it's paying off for him, the starting quarterback, and has them at 3-1 in the conference.
That's pretty incredible to choose Nicholls and FCS school over two FBS schools, especially Maryland being in the Big Ten. That's wild, but hey, whatever works. He saw a chance to get in there and play early, and I'm just happy to see Nicholls State and Louisiana teams doing well. That's great. That's great for them to be 3-1, and I just wish they'd have beaten Georgia, Sean. I got to be honest, that would have been incredible. That would have been the Grambling Arizona and the Nicholls Georgia are the ones that slipped away here.
You're right. I know you pay somewhat close attention, considering where you are doing your show on a daily basis, to Northwestern State at this point. Ben, you just got to say snake bitten. They lose to Lamar 32-31. That's kind of the way it's been this year for the Demons.
It has, and I'm good friends with Patrick Netherton, the voice of Northwestern State. And you can see it just wearing his voice. They've lost a lot of close, heartbreaking games, and just the break's not going Coach Jay Thomas and the Demons' way this year. And I don't know. I wonder how much job security he has, because this year's been kind of rough.
It's I don't know. But you continue to go 1 and 11 are 0 for and you don't win in conference, I got to imagine the job security is not too good. We talk about Nichols being one of the good stories. One of the surprise stories has been McNeese State. They lost a heartbreaker at the end of the game to Southeastern last week at home. Now, I know Central Arkansas is good, but the Cowboys, the Pokes, 35-0 loss to the Sugar Bears.
Wow, that's pretty wild. I didn't see that coming. Maybe it shows Coach Viator got out at the right time, clearly.
Well, and those two teams will square off this week, McNeese State and Northwestern State in Natchitoches.
Well, it seems like McNeese heading the wrong way a little bit then after Viator left. Cause, I mean, the last couple of years, correct me if I'm wrong, they lost, what, one or two regular season games total?
That's it. And then
that is pretty wild. Well,
SLU riding a two-game winning streak after beating McNeese last week. They beat Stephen F. Austin at Stephen F. Austin, 58-34. Lions are playing some good football. They'll take on Houston Baptist next, and I believe that wraps up all the Division I teams, or 1AA teams in the state of Louisiana. So that brings us to, except the big one in Tiger Stadium, Ben. They've played a lot of night games between LSU and Ole Miss. There's a great history between those two teams. I'm sure it's happened before, but I can't remember the last time there was an 8 o'clock kickoff in Death Valley.
Yeah, look, I'm a pretty outspoken Ole Miss fan and Ole Miss grad, but the only thing I can come up with positive for Ole Miss going into this game is that historically when Ole Miss is an underdog in Baton Rouge, they always play incredibly well. But that's the only positive I've got. When you look at LSU, it's going to be fired up. Coach Orgeron built significant momentum. LSU outscores Missouri and Southern Miss, who are both not bad football teams, a combined 87-17 in Coach O's first two games. And Ole Miss coming in a little wounded off that heartbreaking 34-30 loss to Arkansas. They're going to have to play the spoiler role here at 3-3. All hopes of a conference SEC West title are completely dead in mid-October. But you never know in this game. This game always comes to the wire. I want to break down some matchups, though, here, and this is why as an Ole Miss fan I don't feel good about it. When you look at what Ole Miss does well, it's the passing game with Chad Kelly and the speed and size of the wide receivers. Well, LSU is one of the only teams in the country that has these tall, rangy, fast cornerbacks that can match up with the Ole Miss size and speed of receiver. Plus, when you've got guys like Arden Key coming off the edge, I'll question whether Ole Miss's offensive line can hold up the pass rush. To me, the way to beat LSU's defense this year, and it's an elite defense, you got to have balance in the running game, and I think they're going to struggle a little more against Arkansas and Alabama in the power running games than they will against spread offenses like Ole Miss and Texas A&M. And I don't like the way that matches up. And there's another dynamic I want to bring up, and I want to hear what you think of this, Sean. All these LSU fans are kind of acting like they've gotten moved on from Fournette because Darius Geis has now had 360-yard games at home. But these people are crazy. Leonard Fournette's the best running back in the history of that school, and he's gotten a month of rest, and you don't think he's going to come back fired up to take on the stretch run against Ole Miss and Bama and Arkansas? I think he's going to be it's going to be awful tough for the Rebels, who allowed 180 yards to Raleigh Williams, the young running back for Arkansas last week. I think Fournette and Geis have a big day, and I'm an optimistic guy for Ole Miss usually, but I just don't see where the matchup.
All right. Well, let me ask you. Let me go back. What is your question about Geis and Fournette? Because I think right now, Geis has earned the right to get the majority of the carries over Leonard Fournette. Now, hear me out on this. Leonard Fournette has not been the same player this year, and I don't think it's because he's worried about his NFL career. I think he's just been injured since before the season got started. They are two completely different backs, and Leonard Fournette is very, very special, and I think he is one of the best players in college football, but I think Darius Geis is too. As good as Fournette is, Darius Geis is the fastest player in LSU history to 1,000 yards, even over Fournette. Darius Geis leads the country in yards per game. Now, here's the benefit of where you are right now with Geis and Fournette. When Fournette's played, he's had, and this is kind of where his bar is so high, people are saying he's having a down year. He's rushed for 100 yards every game he's played this year. But I would say for this game right now, I would give Geis a majority of the carries, maybe about 20 to 22, and I'd keep Fournette's between 8 to 10 just to try to get those training wheels on or off, however you want to say it, get the rust off, kind of be an emotional lift right now for that team, although I don't think they really need much of one. Get that going. Then you've got the bye before Alabama. You're going to need them both the rest of the way. And then eventually, Ben, and this is scary for the rest of the SEC, I think you're going to, and Coach Orgeron has said 1,000 times his admiration for what they did at USC. I think you're going to start seeing Fournette and Geis used in the same way that Lindell White and Reggie Bush were at USC.
I like that comparison. And, look, I agree with everything you said, specifically with Fournette. He hadn't been right since that ankle injury he suffered in preseason. But in Fournette's defense, the two games he played were at Auburn and at Wisconsin under Les Miles' offense. And both of those teams have elite defenses. LSU's offensive line play hasn't been great. And he still ran for over 100 yards in both games. So I think he, you know, considering he was hurt and what he was up against with the play calling and the offensive line play, I think he did everything he could under his power. And we hadn't seen, as good as Geis has looked, we hadn't seen Fournette play at home against Jacksonville State or Southern Miss or Missouri, some of these weaker matchups. But having said all that, I do agree with your point. You got a bye week after Ole Miss. Why come out and run Fournette into the ground here? It doesn't make any sense. I like the 8 to 10 carries theory. Maybe get him, you know, maybe get him the ball and some swing passes and screen passes out in the flat. You know, instead of the, you know, now that Miles and Cameron are gone, you don't have to do the toss back dive, run into the middle.
Well, Ben, the fact that you can use them both at the same time in the same backfield has got to, again, be nightmares for the defensive coordinators in this league. And honestly, this is the toughest stretch anybody in the country is going to have. And if it's bad this year, it's actually worse next year because of the Florida game flip-flopping. But they're going to need both of these guys with Ole Miss, Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, and Texas A&M the rest of the way.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I think you got to look at the bigger picture here than just this. As big as this Ole Miss game is, and let's not even kid ourselves, Sean. After what happened with Coach O at Ole Miss, to me this is like Napoleon and his Waterloo. Saturday night in Death Valley, Coach O'd run through a brick wall to beat the Rebels. I know how fired up he is about this. He has a very bad taste in his mouth from his time in Oxford. But I like your theory on Fournette and Geis. I think it's fine. You don't need Fournette to be a 30-carry-a-game guy at all with how well Geis has played and the fact that there's some balance with the passing attack. And, Sean, on the passing attack front, I thought it was great last week to see Malachi Dupree finally make some big plays in 2016.
He's gotten going. They've utilized the tight ends, I think, more in the last 3 weeks than they have the last 3 years. And a lot of people, Ben, have pointed out, well, look at the competition they've played against. And I think when you do that, you're being a little narrow-minded and you're not looking at the big picture. What I'm looking at is it's not who they're doing it against, it's what they're doing. This is completely different X's and O's as well as personnel. There's a lot of guys on the field right now who did not play the first month of the season who are seeing significant snaps now. That's what I'm paying attention to.
Look, I took, and I've been saying,
this is a different team. This is a different team right now.
Sean, I mean, I know you're going to think I'm crazy, but I took LSU at 65-1 to win the national championship.
Well, that is a bit crazy, but Ben, if they run this gauntlet, and I don't think they are, but if they go 5-0, they will have a chance and a very big say of getting into the playoffs.
No, that's my point. I think if they beat Ole Miss, which I think they're going to do, it comes down to that Bama game, and if they somehow upset Bama, they'll at least have momentum and be in the conversation, no question about it, because Bama's only lost two regular season games the last couple of years. But regardless, I love what Coach O's doing. I like the play calling. Dave Aranda has an elite defense. They hadn't allowed more than one touchdown in a game yet this season. And the atmosphere Saturday nights can be rocking. This LSU Ole Miss game has always meant a lot to me. I've been to every single one but 2011 since 2000. And I normally feel pretty optimistic for the Rebels. I don't at all. I think LSU, with the momentum they have going in, I like LSU kind of big on Saturday night. I think Vegas has it at LSU by 5.5.
And a lot of people, and you've gone back, and I think justifiably so, had mentioned Orgeron's previous tenure at Ole Miss. And I think everybody would agree it was an absolute disaster. And they said, well, that is the reason why he shouldn't get a chance to be the permanent head coach at LSU. I'll tell you, Ben, I've seen significant changes in Ed Orgeron. I think he realized, and he's gotten a lot of good advice, that Bebe, Coach O, can't be a head football coach. That's a great position coach and recruiter. Ed Orgeron has to be a head coach. Not Bebe, not the personality Coach O, and I think he understands that now.
Look, I honestly, Sean, I don't have as much ill will toward him as a lot of Ole Miss fans do, because he came into one of the worst situations. Cutcliffe pretty much had mailed it in post-Eli Manning, and the talent level when Coach O took over outside of Patrick Willis was that of about UL Monroe. I mean, it was that bad. And Orgeron brings in, you know, Mike Wallace and Michael Ower and Dexter McCluster and Greg Hardy and a bunch of guys that are still playing on Sunday. And then right when those guys are sophomores and juniors, he gets it ripped away. And Houston Nutt got the credit for getting the Ole Miss to two Cotton Bowls and beating Florida with Tebow. When Orgeron's recruiting is what got that. And that was a different Coach O, like you said. He was in the offensive meeting rooms. He was so excited to have his first head coaching job. He didn't know how to manage his time and oversee the program. But he went back to USC, and I think his experience as that interim coach at USC when they went 6-2 a few years ago, he knows more now to let his to delegate to his position coaches. And I like the way he's running LSU. Your friend Derek Pomanski now, chief of staff there. They have a guy that's kind of the GM of the football program. It's a very modern take on how to run a college football.
The thing I was impressed the most, and this shows me the growth, is I read an article that said that Damian Craig, the wide receiver coach, during the game was like, all right, coach, who do you want to put in there personnel-wise at wide receiver? He goes, man, that's your job. You're with them every day. Put the guys in you think who need to play. And that's why you've seen Russell Gage play more. So he's letting his position coaches coach, and he's doing what I think coaches need to do on game day. He's just being the CEO.
I like that, too, and I think that was part of Miles' big problem was how much he kept meddling with the offense. And Orgeron clearly making some good strides. And look, Sean, I mean, I'm very optimistic about what's going on at LSU right now. It's a lot of fun for the fans and Coach O to see what happens.
It certainly helped our show here lately, hadn't it?
Oh, it has. And I think he does have a good chance at the head job. And I'm expecting an insane atmosphere Saturday night, because this Ole Miss LSU thing, There's no love lost between these schools and these fan bases. And, you know, I think LSU fans realize they've got Ole Miss on the ropes here and got the momentum going with Orgeron. And I'm expecting a wild atmosphere. And I'm on the fence. I go every year. I'd say I'm about 50-50 to go down there right now. I got to say I'm feeling a little wounded after that Ole Miss-Arkansas game took a lot out of me. And hopefully the Rebel players don't feel the same way I do.
Well, I think it is going to be the best atmosphere in Tiger Stadium so far this year. It's an 8 o'clock kickoff. It's going to be wild. It's going to be insane. It's going to be loud. And then, Ben, if they win, that might pale in comparison to what it would be in 2 weeks when Alabama comes to town.
Oh, I think no doubt about it. And I've said this, too. I think LSU has the best shot anybody to upset Alabama just because Dave Aranda and that defense will keep them in the game. And when you look back to 2012 and 2014, Bama won both of those games at the last second. I wouldn't be surprised to see LSU compete with Alabama. However, I do not expect Texas A&M to compete at Alabama this week.
No,
I think it's a bad matchup.
You're the big,
I don't think they can match up at the line of scrimmage.
You're the big gambler guy. This is how much credit Alabama's getting, and I get it. Texas A&M is number 6 in the country. They're undefeated, and you know I was high on them before the season. Now, I didn't think they'd be this good, but I thought they're going to be better than they were previously projected. I thought they'd be second or third in the West. Alabama against an undefeated top 10 team is a 17-point favorite, and I think they're going to cover it.
Yeah, I do too. And when you look at it, just everybody saw Alabama destroy Tennessee last week, 49-10, and then everybody also saw the Tennessee A&M overtime thriller. Tennessee had 650 yards of offense against Texas A&M, and would they have 140 against Bama last week?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of
a different animal.
How tough Bama is. Yeah, they're just so tough at the line of scrimmage. And we saw Texas A&M struggle to stop the run against Tennessee. I'm worried about them stopping the Bama power running game. But the one thing, or two things in A&M's favor, someone's won at Tuscaloosa before, and Trevor Knight's also beaten Bama before in that 14 Sugar Bowl. So maybe having a head coach and a quarterback that aren't afraid of the elephants and the Crimson Tide certainly gives them a shot.
Or that pisses off the monster. one of the two.
That's true. No, that is true.
No, just real quick, on the Saints note, don't look now. The New Orleans Saints have won 2 in a row.
They have. And, man, Sean, I got to be honest. As a Saints fan, you know, the Falcons will always be the biggest rival.
Boy, but Carolina's growing, man.
Turned into number two.
They might be number one for me. They might be number one for me over the Falcons.
And the Cam Newton thing, and it's just so great for the Saints to put Carolina in their grave now at 1-5. You can write off the 2016 Panthers. And Drew Brees, 448 yards, I believe. What can you say about that offense when Sean Payton, Drew Brees, and those guys are on the Superdome turf? There's nothing like it. And the defense certainly allowed Carolina back into the game, but regardless, as bad as the 0-3 start was, the Saints games have come down to four of the five games have come down to the wire now this season so far. And you got to just give the Saints credit for not giving up when they're 0-3. And look, I don't know that this team's necessarily going anywhere, but for one day only, it felt like 0-9 in the Superdome, and it was absolutely awesome to end Carolina's playoff hopes.
Last thing, the Saints under Peyton and Breeze have dug themselves some holes, and a lot of times they've managed to get back to 500. They've never been able to get over 500 when they've dug an 0-2, 0-3, 0-4 hole. But they've gotten to 500. Now they're going to have to try to get to 500 against a very good Kansas City Chiefs team. Then it's Seattle at home, at San Francisco, Denver at home, short week Carolina, Rams, Lions at home, at Bucks, at Cardinals, Bucks on Christmas Eve in the Dome, at Atlanta. It's certainly not an easy stretch the rest of the way, but that's the NFL. Regardless, you know it's usually going to come down to the fourth quarter.
This KC game, I think, is a bad matchup for the Saints, this, especially with when you look at hopefully Andrews Pete is getting better and played better at left tackle last week. I'm seeing some improvement for him, which is great because he was so maligned last year and early this year. But they're going to need, with Armstead being hurt, man, without Armstead or Pete, I seriously worry about the Saints at left tackle against the KC pass rush. Kansas City plays extremely tough defense at home. Look, I'm a positive guy, but I don't like the way this matchup is for the Saints. This looks like a game they're going to struggle on offense on the road. I don't like their chances on Sunday. I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong as well, Ben. Always appreciate it, pal.
Yeah.
We got to thank our sponsor first. Yeah. Old Steve.
Yeah, Steve Mintz, feeling like financial consultant. Sound financial advice. Get in touch with him at 318-325-5090. 25 years now as a feeling like financial consultant. No one knows the stock market better than Steve Mintz, the only financial consultant. And, Sean, always a pleasure to talk Born in the Boot with you. We've got some advertising plans we're looking forward to getting after. And thank you to all the listeners, and have a lovely week. And hopefully this Ole Miss LSU game is a better game than I think it's going to be.
And I appreciate everybody who's been following us on Facebook and Twitter. It's nice to see a lot of new views. We hope to keep adding more to the the club.
Got to keep pounding, man. Got to keep pounding. All right. Well, take it easy, Sean, and thank you all for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Born in the Boot. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Google Play, or at redpeachsports.com.